Well, good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. This is Richard Dayoub, President and CEO of the Greater El Paso Chamber of Commerce. And as I am, I guess, becoming famous or infamous of doing, I always like to introduce my guests on the show as my very special guests. But today really is a pretty special guy in our own El Paso Police Chief, Greg Allen, who happens to also be a personal friend of mine. Welcome, Greg. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Richard. Glad to be here.
Thank you. So we have a little bit of time to just talk a little bit about thinking in terms of what our listening audience would like to hear about. Everybody's always concerned about safety. And I think we should start off with a very positive note. I think this is our fifth year running as a community rated as the number one safest major metropolitan city in the nation with a population of 500,000 or more. Is that correct?
Well, almost correct. We haven't done those statistics to verify that, but the last rating, if it had been done, would have given us 5 years, and that was last year. And if it had been done by CQ Press, as it had been done in the past, we probably would be, for the sixth year running, the safest city in the United States.
Well, that's great. So here's your chance to honk your own horn, as the phrase goes. So to what do you attribute the success we have in being such a safe city to live in?
I think it's a combination of things. Actually, I attribute the success to the men and women of the El Paso Police Department and then the El Paso community itself. You know, this has always been a very congenial community, open to different cultures and different peoples that come through here. And I think El Pasoans are benefiting from that in the safe city designation.
Well, that's great to hear. And actually, I would attest to that. I've been here most of my adult life. And I have always found that, except when they pulled me over for driving too fast.
Shouldn't be speed.
that they are really a very friendly police department. They seem to be open in some fashion with their demeanor, their mannerisms, to indicate that they're really here to help.
I think that so for the most part. You know, any organization has its bad apples, and we've had ours, and, you know, at different points in time, just because a person's a human, being a police officer, you're going to see people who are police officers having a bad day. So sometimes you'll run into that type of individual. Hopefully very rarely, but
that's,
you know,
usually the time when they stop me for driving too fast, and I try to give them my phony excuse, and they just look at me like, you know,
heard
this is
it
not
all,
my
huh?
first time at the rodeo, right?
Yeah.
So you may or may not have these statistics. Excuse me. Let's do that over again. Thank you, Dennis. So you may or may not have that statistical data available at your fingertips, but if you do, or mentally, how large is our police force?
Right now, we're 1,023. The force size when I first took on the chief position back in 2008 was 1,158. We've actually dwindled in size over the last 8 years, and that has been my bone of contention as far as my needs and wants with the city for the last past 8 years to bring up the staffing levels to more adequate levels, and that determination on what is adequate I leave to the city because police officers are expensive. But with that being said, looking at different cities across the state of Texas, for instance, Austin as a main example, they're comparable to our size geographically. I think we should be pretty close to them. They're right now at roughly, I believe it's 1,500 to 1,700 officers. And so if you look at our 1,020-plus officers, we're falling behind the curve.
In terms of a breakdown, before we go into what you explained to me before we went on the air, I'd like to ask you, to what do you attribute the reduction in force since then?
Well, the department's aging. You know, we've got a significant number of people who can retire right now, and that's 20 years plus, and some of those people are at the point in their lives where they've put in 20 years with the department, they've earned a pension pretty much, and now they're potentially looking to go other places where they can get a second career going and possibly a second pension. And with that being said, some people were taking advantage of that because they're looking at their age possibly and the fact that they only have X number of years life is left in their work life, and so they're probably looking at those deals. But we've got right now what we call a forward drop program that the city agreed to here a few months back, and we're looking at that potentially offsetting some of the officers leaving right now that have some seniority and experience value that I think we can benefit from by hopefully them staying longer.
Would you mind explaining what that concept is to our listeners?
Well, the forward drop is where you basically retire and then your money, your monthly salary, will go into a savings fund for the future. And that gets put in at a larger amount of money than it would be in a pension program. But it helps actually the pension program to sustain itself because the money is now being diversified in different ways. And I don't know financially what that all means, but I would have to get a pension person in here to explain it more. But it's a real enticing plan. And the difficulty of that, though, is when to do it. Because if you got your time in and you want to promote, if you do it before the promotion, it kind of freezes you at that level. And the promotion is not going to help you significantly for the future if you were to do that. So it has some, you know, concerns that you have to be careful with. And but overall, it's a very good program.
But the underlying mission in this effort, then, if I understand you correctly, is to encourage those officers to stay on.
That's what we were hoping for. We don't know yet. We're actually into the second month of it. It actually started July 1st. So we've got almost 2 months in now of seeing how it works. But I can tell you some people, they're still going to make decisions that take them other places.
Okay. So thank you for that explanation. And so we were talking again before we went on the air about some of the conversations that have been occurring recently that not only relate to the budget, the city's budget and the
right.
police department, but also to concerns about patrol officers is a term so frequently used.
Right.
And it's used in very much a generalized term. So please explain to the audience what you explained to me earlier, defining these.
Yeah, patrol officer was an old term. In fact, the term when I first came on the department 38 years ago was patrolman. With that being said, you know, with the diversity of women joining the department, we can't call officers now patrolmen when they're women wearing those badges any longer. So I've started calling police officers police officers. The generic term allows more flexibility for us because right now when you look at patrolman or patrol officer, it gives the impression to some people who aren't really familiar with the police department's ranking structure that that person is in the patrol ranks actually performing a patrol function. With that being said, it leads to confusion because the patrol officer function is actually a position that allows a lot of flexibility for officers to be put in different categories in the department that benefit the department in its efforts to protect this city, namely crime scene officers, bike officers, tactical officers, and on it goes. And so with that designation, they still, even though they're working a crime scene function, they're still a patrol officer. And with some of our political people, that became a confusing factor because they thought those people were actually in patrol in a MARC unit, patrolling neighborhoods and businesses and handling calls for service on a day-to-day basis when actually they're not doing that function.
Yeah, so what are – start from the top and work your way down.
Well,
categories.
When you first come on the department and you become a police recruit, then after 7.5 months of training, you graduate from the academy, you become a police officer. And with that, you're licensed by the state of Texas. You're on a year's probationary program for the furtherance of your development because becoming a police officer is not guaranteed. You still have a year to prove yourself, so it's a ongoing selection process through the 19 months that you're first on the department. So with that being said, you have patrol officer or police officer. I'm going back to the old terms. Then you have detective. You have sergeant, lieutenant, commander, deputy chief, assistant chief, chief positions on the department. In some departments across the country, we don't have it, but they actually also have captains and majors, depending on the size of the department and how big they want to spread out their chain of command or span of control.
Yeah, something else we don't have here, if I'm not mistaken, we don't have a police commissioner.
No, we don't have a police commissioner. And the police commissioner, using New York as an example, you have a police commissioner, then the chief of police. I don't know if that's the actual term, but that would be pretty much the oversight there. And then various departments have breakdowns very similar to what we have. That's interesting that you bring that up, because we have an officer here who was a New York police officer on 9/11. And when he saw the benefits of El Paso in visiting a relative down here, he decided to become an El Paso police officer because of the area, the affordable housing, the actual better salary that the El Paso police officer has over New York police.
More affordable living.
Affordable living, yeah.
And I've heard a rumor that our weather is a little better than New York's.
Oh, yeah. All depends on what you like, though. You know, the little rainy days here in El Paso could be a little bit more frequent.
Well, I have to tell you honestly, I never complain about our weather.
Yeah.
I love it. And when the rain comes, that's just a blessing for El Paso.
Oh, it sure is.
So these last couple evenings have been a great pleasure for me as well. So with regard to these very – when you were talking about the various titled positions, it prompted a thought in my mind. You have regional command centers.
Yes,
how many do we have in El Paso?
We have five. We have Central, West Side Regional Command, Pebble Hills Regional Command, Northeast Regional Command, and Mission Valley Regional Command. And they're staffed at various levels, and the staffing levels there vary according to crime trends and or the availability of officers. So you'll find the Pebble Hills Command and Central Command, as an example, to be staffed more than the other commands. And not that the staffing levels at those commands are adequate. That's just what we have on the ground and are able to put in place on the racial level of what crime trends are actually addressing there at the various regions.
And so the title position for the individuals who oversee each of those command centers?
It's a regional commander.
Regional commander.
Commander.
Okay.
And that's just under deputy chief position. And they have not full autonomy, but pretty much they run the show there.
So they report up to a deputy chief?
We don't have the deputy chief position right now. We just have assistant chief, but they report to an assistant chief. And we have four assistant chiefs right now. Two oversee patrol operations. One oversees Major Crime Bureau, which is an investigative bureau. And then we have Support Services Bureau chief. And then myself.
Okay. That's great. Thank you for sharing that with us. So I'd like to just kind of talk a little bit about We mentioned safest city, but we all know that. We have a decent amount of crime. We're a major metropolitan area. Perhaps you could just, without going into elaborate detail or specific statistical data, so what are the biggest issues the police department faces on a daily basis?
Well, actually, it's not the major crimes, which are known as uniform crime report statistics. Those are your aggravated assault, aggravated robbery, aggravated sexual assault, murder. Those types of crimes are really not predominantly what we're concerned about, even though they do occur in El Paso. I'm not saying we're crime-free in regards to those particular offenses. The real thing that drives El Paso Police Department are the day-to-day calls, for instance, traffic accidents, loud music, barking dog, that type of thing. You know, they come in on a very frequent basis, and with that being said, those calls aren't being handled in a timely basis the way I think they should be. And when that's not done, that's where I think the police department, as good as we are, and I proudly say that, we fail the community to some degree, and that's what I've pointed out time and time again through the budget sessions over the last few years, where we need to address those little things, because for the individual calling in, those crimes or incidents are just as important as something that everyone knows is horrendous, such as a robbery or murder or something like that. because the satisfaction is not being addressed.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. Traffic okay. accidents. Certainly since the Go 10 project began, and now with the implementation over the next year or so of the trolley car tracks being installed in the central part of the city, between UTEP and downtown. On top of that, we're doing the Paisano project, where we're going to build the...
I'm glad I live on the east side, Richard.
I remember the east side suffered through some growth pains as well. It's the west side's turn now, right?
Every
time I talk to somebody on the east side, the first words out of their mouths to me are, please, don't complain about traffic to us because we've lived it for a long time.
Yeah.
And they're right. But with traffic accidents, certainly on the increase, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions related to that. One, what can the public do to assist the police department? Let's talk about that first as it relates to traffic accidents.
Well, predominantly you're going to see inattention, and I think that's driven by some of our technology or electronic devices, inattention. A lot of people, when I'm on the same roadway with them, I don't see them maintaining a safe distance from the vehicle in front of them, because they're distracted or they just don't know. And so if they do have to stop abruptly, they have very little time if they're following too closely. So little things like that you have to pay attention to. You can't take it for granted. And some of the other things I see on a daily basis are some of the motorcyclists zigzagging in and out of traffic, the younger kids driving erratically because they're young and dumb pretty much and they don't know what the potential is. But, just basic courtesy on the roadway. You have to have that if everyone's going to, get to their designated point safely and timely. There's going to be those unavoidable situations where, you're just going to get stuck in traffic. And that's where some of those things I just mentioned really need to be in place, because you have to respect the other drivers on the road. The roadway isn't just your roadway. And unfortunately, again, going back to our staffing needs, I can see we could mitigate some of that if we just had more officers that could get out to some of these accident scenes to, help direct the traffic and keep traffic flowing. And sometimes that takes a lot of time and effort to get to.
Yeah, actually, that's a very good point, because what I've seen, both personally visualizing it while I'm on the road, as well as in the news subsequently, some of the challenges the police and fire safety folks face is when there is a serious accident, because of the congestion surrounding it, sometimes it's so bad that cars can't pull over to the right side of the road to get
exactly.
out of the way and allow emergency.
Yeah, the lanes on the roadway are a lot more narrow. There's hardly any shoulder in some spots. So, it makes it very dangerous for individuals to stop there. And a word of advice on that, if you happen to have your vehicle stall out on you, there's no shoulder you can pull over to, stay in the vehicle, put your flashers on, don't get out of the vehicle right then and there, and stay buckled up, as a matter of fact, because even though you're stationary, that doesn't mean an impact from the rear can't severely injure you if you're not tied down to that vehicle. So, people are going to have to be a lot more aware. And like I tell my wife all the time, you can't take things for granted. You have to look at the day-to-day things being potentially very dangerous, but you get used to it simply because it's so routine.
That's really a great point. I just ran into a friend today that I happened to ask her why she was limping, noticeably limping, and she was rear-ended. She wasn't on the freeway, and she wasn't stopped. She was moving, but she got rear-ended, and so severely it dislocated her spine.
Wow.
And until she gets surgery completed, she is in such pain she can't walk with a normal gait. And so stay in your vehicle. And then this is the one time when we want to encourage you to use your cell phone while you're
exactly.
in the car.
That's
call. So who do you call? Do you call 911?
Call 911. That's going to be an emergency number. That call gets moved up in concern levels, because now you've got a potential life-threatening situation in place if you're out on that freeway. And like we had a month or two ago where an 18-wheeler crashed into two women on the freeway, and that was a horrendous accident. Two people lost their lives in the scene is something that you know, you would see only a horror show pretty much. That's how bad it was.
Yeah. As I remember, that truck driver was driving at an exceptionally high speed. And for
exactly.
whatever reasons, his inattentiveness is what resulted in him not realizing traffic had slowed down dramatically.
Exactly.
And it was too late for him to react.
Yeah. That was real unfortunate. When I look at the findings from the autopsies and stuff like that, it's something that, you know, really disturbing to see happen. I mean, but those things happen. That's why you've got to look out for yourself. You've got to be alert all the time, especially in that roadway, on that roadway, because the routineness of it sometimes distracts people from how dangerous driving can be.
Especially on I-10 now, from Executive to the Sunland Park, where you've lost a shoulder, so there really is nowhere to react.
That's it.
And so the slower you go, and the further you space yourself between you and the car in front of you.
And make sure your vehicle is in good working condition. You know, prepare for the worst. Use that Boy Scout model. Be prepared. Be out there with enough gas in your tank and, you know, that type of thing where you're not going to run out of gas and cause a backup simply because you didn't, you know, think about putting gas in your vehicle.
Well, as I told you earlier, jokingly, I interviewed a couple of months ago the folks from TxDOT as we were getting ready to launch all these new closures
right.
in order to advance the community and grow, right? It's all progress. Jennifer Wright likes to use the phrase, so...
That's my buddy.
She's our buddy, too. And so her comment is, you're not in traffic. You are traffic.
Right.
You're part of it. And so if you recognize that and pay attention, do your part. Of course, if everybody else were doing their part as well, we would have fewer accidents. So shifting gears a little bit, no pun intended, let's talk a little bit about why I believe El Paso is a safer community in terms of crime, et cetera. But right before we talk about that, you didn't mention gangs to me when I gave you the opportunity to prioritize. Where do gangs fall in your list of challenges?
They're up there. In fact, that's one of the units of the department that I've told my staff that we need to increase the number of gang officers in, because when the gangs start really getting off the ground in the early 90s here, Chief Scagno at the time took a unit of the department known as the Tactical Section, which was about 20-some-odd officers, and dedicated them to dealing with the gang problems that were beginning to rise. And one of the things I think that keeps gangs from getting out of hand is to stay on top of them every time they make a move, and that's what we've done here in El Paso. Whereas if you look at cities like Chicago, the gangs are out of control. They're driving their murder rate so horrendously that that's predominantly their main problem there, and they're not able to do a whole lot about it there.
That's a great point. Chicago's a great example. I was almost every night now when I watch the evening national news, Chicago's almost always featured, and they talk about how many more deaths are occurring, and it's really kind of tragic. I just got back from a meeting in, of all places, Savannah, Georgia, and I pulled up this magazine. It's called the Money and Law Issue, and they're talking about the drug wars in places like Savannah, Georgia, and the whole region, and how the law enforcement have had to invest so much more heavily, not only in equipment, but in recruiting officers and then training them to be prepared. And you can see from this photograph, this female officer is, first of all, she's hooded to
right.
protect her identity, but they also have to wear full battle gear. You'd think they were in Iraq. We're talking about flak jackets and heavy artillery that they're carrying, which fortunately we don't have to worry about here. And thanks to the work of you and your officers, we appreciate that. So here's a speculation I'd like you to
okay.
clarify for me, because I get asked all the time. You know, like I'm supposed to know the answers. Why is El Paso such a safe city? And my quick response is, if you look at the alphabet that we have in El Paso of law enforcement, we have Customs and Border Protection. We have Department of Homeland Security. We have the ATF, right? Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. We have, you name a few more for me.
FBI,
CIA,
service.
Right? DEA, Drug Enforcement Agency, along with our police department and our excellent Sheriff's Department. So my quick response, I want to be sure I'm right, so I don't say it again if I'm wrong, is they all worked closely together, did they not?
Yeah, we work closely together, and right now we have a relationship where if we have bones to pick with one another, you know, everyone does that in a respectful way. It doesn't rub anyone wrong, and we're able to move forward on a given problem. So we really do a good job in working together here collaboratively.
Well, and my extra comment to whoever asked the question is, if you are a criminal and you have bad behavior on your mind and you have a choice to do it in El Paso, where you have all of these agencies we just mentioned to come down on you, or you can go somewhere else where perhaps we only have a smaller police department or a sheriff's department, not to mention we forgot Department of Public Safety, who are also participants in this, where would you go? So if you're, I know criminals are not usually known to be smart, but they have enough intelligence to figure out maybe this isn't the spot to do it, right?
Large degree. You know, we're very proactive here, all the agencies. We work together well, and I think that working relationship has been an example. In fact, the FBI director, when he was first here introducing himself to the agencies, he made note of that later, I understand, when he went and visited other field offices of the FBI. He made a notation that El Paso was a standout as far as cooperation.
That's great. So I've just been given the cue by Dennis that we're down to 2 minutes left. It's a fast half an hour. Is there a closing comment, Chief Allen, that you'd like to share?
Well, I'd like to thank you for inviting me here to talk. And, you know, I think El Paso can be very proud of its police department because they get a lot of bang for the buck. And the officers of this department are very dedicated to the community. And with that dedication, I think the results are being shown in the Safe City designations.
So I'm going to say a political statement because you can't. The Chamber of Commerce has consistently encouraged, I'll use that term, encouraged our city council, our city manager, our mayor, to continue to strongly invest in our police, fire, and safety because that's what makes, you know, that's an economic development tool for our community. When the mayor goes out to recruit, he carries that banner to say we're the safest major city. But we want to be able to continue to carry that banner.
Exactly.
And in order to do that, we have to invest in our police department. So on behalf of our listening audience, I want to convey to you at KTEP how much we appreciate what you and your officers do day in and day out protect this community. I know you're, under a lot of pressure, but we thank you for doing it. So my last statement, as I always pursue, is to say to our listening audience, if you listen to KTEP, then you're a fan of KTEP and NPR. And if you're not a member of KTEP, I want to strongly encourage you to do so by going to ktep.org and make an investment, however small, however large, to support this community and continue the great efforts of public radio. And with that, we close our program. Thank you all for listening and enjoy your Saturday afternoon.
Thank you, Richard.